from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In the budget he proposed just last week, Governor Newsom allocated $2 billion for housing initiatives. But perhaps the bigger housing news is money that Newsom has threatened not to distribute. Specifically, the governor says that he will withhold transportation funding from regions that fail to meet new housing goals. Supporters of the idea like the additional incentive for communities to build, but critics say that home building is complex and it's ruled by market forces and cities shouldn't be punished for forces outside their control. Joining us to discuss the proposal is Amy Fishman here in studio with us. She's executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association in Northern California. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. Also good to have Chris Lee with us from Sacramento, legislative representative for Housing, Land Use and Transportation, California State Association of Counties. Welcome, Chris Lee.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you as well. And Amy Fishman, let me begin with you. And let's just say right from the beginning here that this is money that probably you are pretty happy about. I mean, it represents kind of a shift from Governor Brown just in terms of revenue, housing and homeless initiative, which will mean a couple of billion dollars, $3 billion to be specific. And also have the governor saying he's going to get maybe some millions of dollars from Silicon Valley. But the real, I guess, thorny question is, and I'd like to go to you on this, what about holding cities accountable? I mean, this is a carrot or stick approach. Why are you for it?
We are thrilled with the governor's focus on housing, that he is championing housing issues, and it is about time. Californians have told us time and again that housing is their number one priority. And in fact, Californians had voted for affordable housing in numbers that are often higher or mostly higher than what elected officials have received. So it is high time for elected officials to take the leadership that we need them to take and make housing their number one issue on the agenda, because it is for California families.
What do you say, though, to the argument that this comes out of transportation money and that transportation money is needed, particularly in places like the Central Valley, and they're going to be not necessarily towing the line in terms of how much their population conforms to the targets here? And so there's an inequity that's built into this.
Well, there's definitely work to be done to make sure that this policy will work well throughout California and in every single jurisdiction in the state. But what we know is critical, that housing and transportation goes together. In fact, at the governor's press conference right after his budget announcements, he says, transportation is housing and housing is transportation. We know that we cannot address our transportation problems unless we address our housing crisis. So it is absolutely essential that we invest in the infrastructure of housing in order to make transportation work. So we are thrilled that they're tied together.
I'm sorry. Well, initially he said he might leverage money from the tax, gas tax revenue, but that stirred up quite a number of hornet's nests. Chris Lee, you're concerned about this coming out of the transportation bucket?
Well, first, I'd like to say that we're obviously very thankful for the governor's recognition that solving the housing crisis is going to take state resources and state involvement. So to borrow his phrase, you know, $250 million for updating plans and coming up with new metrics, $500 million in incentive funding, that is not small ball. The thing we have concerns with is when we try to condition other funding on factors that are beyond local government control. So if you look at our current affordable housing crisis, we've got millions of units that are needed, that are planned for, but we don't have subsidy to build all those units. So unless we really change what the planning goals are, we're really worried that conditioning transportation funding on housing production is just going to be setting up a lot of jurisdictions to fail.
So the tie of transportation funds, in your judgment, I mean, just to put it plainly, is not a good idea.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of details that remain to be worked out, but the premise is very concerning to local governments.
There's also the problem in many people's minds that I mentioned a moment ago, that if you're going to be pulling state monies from cities that don't build enough housing, you're going to create another kind of inequity. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you've also got the concern about, well, that housing production has much to do with developers and market forces, and it's affected by also environmental permits and restrictive zoning. I mean, there's a lot in this whole package when we're talking about building more housing.
That's true. And, you know, CSAC worked really hard last year to get an infill exemption from the California Environmental Quality Act so urbanized unincorporated areas could build infill homes much more quickly. That took us decades to get. And so we're glad to see attention on the permitting side on all the other issues that you point out. But we just have to recognize when we're talking about withholding funding from local governments that we really have to acknowledge the market forces that are not under our control versus the small amount of authority we do have. have over zoning and planning for housing.
And Amy Fishman, these market forces and, frankly, the way the winds blow, the variables are outside of local control often, aren't they?
Well, there is a lot that is under control. Absolutely, there are market forces, but there are often local obstacles to overcome. There are ways that local jurisdictions can pave the way for more housing. And we know that local communities will need to find their local solutions that's right for their own community members. This proposal wouldn't tell local communities how to address the crisis. It simply requires them to do it and to bring everybody up to the baseline. And that is what is necessary, because the alternative is what we have today, which is too many people flooding the streets and housing insecurity and an increase in human suffering and a transportation system that can't work with mega commutes.
We have the highest poverty rate in the nation. Is this going to change that? Is this going to really move the needle, do you think?
Well, the greatest factor driving the poverty rate is housing costs. So we have to provide housing to drive down the housing costs and make housing affordable for those who need it the most, and to make California a place where everyone can have a place to call home. And I should say that we know these programs work. We have tried them out in the Bay Area, and we've seen some remarkable results.
And if I go back to you on this, Chris Lee, how is the governor going to decide, or let me rephrase that, I think it must be of concern to you that the governor may have to decide with criteria that aren't really clear what cities are bad actors in all this and who gets the money and who doesn't. I mean, it's a carrot stick, as I said.
That's definitely the rub. I think we have a lot of jurisdictions. You know, CSAC represents all 58 counties in California. We are not all similarly situated as the 9 Bay Area counties. And so the question will be, how do you draft a bill that parses out who's obstructing housing, who's trying to get housing built, but the market's not there? That's very difficult to draft, and that's why we're raising concerns with this initial proposal.
Well, there's been a state requirement that's been actually on the books for about a half a century now, but it's certainly not necessarily getting people to comply. In fact, quite the contrary, and that's part of this whole problem. Let me invite those of you listening to join us and hear your thoughts. We can talk about how the governor is actually moving forward on housing and moving forward in the ways that a lot of people are certainly happy about. And you're hearing what Amy Fishman has to say on this, but also many are concerned about in terms of the market and how it works, and also about transportation money. Let's hear what Chris Lee has expressed his concerns about. Let's hear what your concerns are, and let's hear what your thoughts are and opinions. Let me invite you to join us right now. The toll-free number to do that, 866-733-6786. You can be part of the program, and we invite you to do that now by calling in at 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us any questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You think it's appropriate to withhold transportation funding from cities that don't meet housing goals? And the governor wants to essentially recalibrate housing goals for cities. And we've been talking about that. And again, you may indeed want to weigh in here. Chris Lee, by the way, is legislative representative for housing, land use, and transportation with the California State Association of Counties. And Amy Fishman, here in studio with us, is executive director of the nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. Your thoughts, Amy, about how the governor is going to decide who are the bad or wrong actors here and who deserve some money?
Well, why don't I give an example of what happened in the Bay Area? And yes, the Bay Area is distinct from around the state, but it still provides some important examples. So in 2013, we helped work with MTC to pass the One Bay Area grant program. And just as you talked about those housing plans that have been on the record that jurisdictions needed to have and often didn't, well, once this One Bay Area grant program passed, it basically tied a certain portion of regional transportation dollars to having an up-to-date plan. Well, lo and behold, 30% of the jurisdictions that had not had in 40 years an up-to-date plan suddenly came up to date with their plan. So all 110 jurisdictions in the Bay Area had an up-to-date plan. And that once you bring people up to the baseline, there's a new program that we're working with MTC, which is the Housing Incentive Program, to provide additional incentives for jurisdictions, the 15 largest producers of housing. And so there are ways to do these programs. There's ways to calibrate it across the state based on local conditions. But the bottom line here is that housing has to be connected to transportation. They go hand in hand.
The argument, though, on the other side, Chris Lee, is that in the Central Valley, and for that matter in other areas like the Inland Empire, you have a different world than the Bay Area, and you have a world where there's terrible poverty, and no cities are actually meeting housing goals presently.
Right. There's very few jurisdictions across California that are meeting both their below moderate income and their market rate production goals that they plan for in the plans that, Amy was talking about. And I think that's a good example is really the requirement has always been to adopt zoning and adopt plans that can accommodate your share of growth. That's where the local government responsibility essentially ends, and it's left to the market to bring that housing into being.
I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Bonnie, and then I'm going to go to calls here. And Bonnie writes, the tax we voted is for infrastructure. Our roads suck. Maybe a practical question here, Chris Lee, about the road sucking. I mean, aren't there limitations for moving funds around like we're talking about here, like the governor is proposing?
There are certainly constitutional protections for the fuel taxes and registration fees. So those funds have to be used for transportation purposes. And I think it's really important to note that the voters have consistently said time and time again that they want transportation money spent for transportation purposes. They don't want it diverted and they don't want it withheld. So that's a sort of a context that we'll have to consider as this discussion continues.
And how do you consider this, Amy Fishman? I mean, there are transportation advocates who say this ought to be a local concern. We don't want the state interfering, and at the local level is where housing approval should be.
Well, housing has risen to the top of the agenda as a matter of state concern. It is an urgent matter, and we need to do things differently. If we do things the way that we've always done them, we will see the same results. We know that. I want to tell a story from what happened at the housing discussion yesterday that the governor did with Mayor Liccardo with a group of people. And it was a story of Noemi Guzman, who works in San Jose as a nonprofit legal assistant, and she commutes 2.5 hours to work each morning from Los Baños. And she talked about how on Fridays, it's gotten worse and worse. And sometimes the commute takes up to 6 hours. And then she made me cry with her story about how when her voice broke and she said she's not able to raise her kids, she's got 3 kids and she can't take them to basketball and soccer. And as a working mom with 2 kids, 2 young kids of my own, it breaks my heart. We cannot live this way with mega commutes around the region, people not able to afford homes where they work. And so the system is broken, and we need to change the incentives and to change the mandates to get the outcomes that we need.
Chris Lee, you would say what to what you just heard from Amy Fishman?
I think policymakers at every level of government realize that we need to step up and build more housing. I think it's just really important to note that when we talk about the below market rate segment that we're all struggling to help get people into housing, we have 2.2 million low and very low income households that are competing for 664,000 units that are at a rate that they can afford. Closing that gap is going to require billions and billions of dollars. And so we've got to look at all of the drivers of this problem and not just pretend that local governments can close the gap on their own if only some funding is withheld from them.
Well, one legislator who certainly made an effort to do something about closing the gap is Scott Wiener. And I think Jane from Fairfax, our first caller, wants to talk about that. Jane, you're on.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in Fairfax, and we are struggling with this. I personally lived in New York. I saw what happened to the Jersey Turnpike. When you pile a bunch of housing close to freeways, roads that turn into freeways, I mean, our population is growing steadily. We all know that. So our little roads are going to become bigger roads. And if Wiener's dreadful, I think, bill passes and we are forced to build multi-story buildings on Sir Francis Drake, all along our roads, it is going to be the death of the uniqueness of all the little towns in Marin. We can't help it that we're mostly white people. That's how it naturally occurred. It doesn't mean that anybody is barred from living here. It's true. It costs money. It's the problem I see with this whole business of affordable housing is that it's profit-driven. We live in a capitalist society, so all that happens is the developers get a free pass, our ridgelines get ruined, our town plans are trash. We have no voice as residents. We have to bend over and kowtow to the state. And Wiener, I don't know what he's thinking. We're not all the same. The cookie-cutter approach simply doesn't work. It's a disaster. We're all going to wind up in little tiny houses, the little ticky-tacky houses that woman sang the folk song about.
That was about Daly City. But let me go to Amy Fishman and get some response to your rather strong feelings about this, Jane. Amy?
Yeah, I'd like to say that we, I think, all of us embrace that California is a leader on social justice issues and inclusion, and it's even more important today with the president that we have in the White House and the current political climate, that we stand for inclusion, we stand for policies that care about people. And that's what these housing policies do. It's about caring for all Californians, that no one should live on the street. The 130,000 people that are living on the street today, look at all the fire survivors that have lost their homes. This is not acceptable. We all have to do our part to make these solutions work, because right now it's not working.
Jane, you want to respond to what Amy said?
In a way, not to do it. Forcing people to ruin their towns in an effort to serve the people who are homeless, and forget about the people who live here, work here, pay taxes, love it the way it is. There are shopping centers that are dying. There's a beautiful article in the IJ today by Dick Spotswood, and he calls out a number of places here in Marin where there are dying or dead shopping malls that would make great affordable housing, because you don't have to change the whole landscape. You could build something beautiful on ground that's already been taken. You don't have to take new places and ruin our towns in the effort to serve those who are suffering by living on the street, to make us who live in our homes suffer by living in blight.
All right, Jane, your argument with a good deal of lucidity, and I appreciate it, because it does set apart very strong points of view, and they really tie in with what we've been talking about. Let me get some more tie-ins from more of our callers. Jake, you're on next. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Throughout the world, California is known well for its sprawl. You know, we spread out all over the place, L.A. especially. One thing, especially focused on the Bay Area, but applicable to all the regions in the state, I wonder why don't we build up more? You know, there are a lot of zoning restrictions that one of which I'd like to see change is height restrictions. You know, contrary to the last caller, you know, I think she was one of the people who would bemoan the Manhattanization, as it's usually called, of areas like San Francisco. But to me, it seems like an area of similar size where you can fit 10 times as many people. Maybe that's an extreme example, but that would certainly solve the housing inventory problem, I would think.
It's a reasonable argument that we've heard from a number of listeners in the past. And Chris Lee, what about building up? Your thoughts?
Well, I think in our current plans, we have requirements to zone for higher densities to accommodate that sort of construction. As I mentioned earlier, we pursued a bill last year that's designed to accelerate the permitting process for infill housing, which is going to be more dense. And so counties are in an interesting position, of course, having land use control over the unincorporated areas, which in some cases is very rural and agricultural, and in other cases is more urban. But I think state policy is definitely pushing us towards more land, more infill, and I think because of that, we'll see more dense construction. The issue, of course, is does the market bear out, you know, steel frame construction or concrete podium construction in every market segment, or is it more profitable for developers to build low density? So again, there's market forces there that are at work, and what works in one area might not pencil out in another.
Let me thank Jake for his call and read a comment from a listener named Bradley, who says, while penalties for communities whose inaction on building affordable housing sounds like a great idea, I'm not convinced. For example, very affluent places like Mill Valley and Palo Alto have long histories of not lifting a finger to increase affordable housing, specifically because they are rich, exclusive communities that wish to stay that way, and they have the tax basis to go it alone. And a question from Louise that I suspect, Amy Fishman, you hear often. She says, could you clarify what affordable housing is? How is it even possible? Are they rentals or purchases? Many that I talk to say there is no such thing as affordable. It's impossible.
Yeah, before I get to that, I just wanted to backtrack on Wiener's proposals and some of the discussions that were just had, and then get to this critical issue of what is affordable. And so it only makes sense, it's only reasonable and rational that we are going to build more near transportation systems. We've invested in transit, so that is exactly where we need to focus some of our development so that we can get cars off the roads. It helps everyone when we take the have fewer cars on the roads. It doesn't make sense. Sprawl, as we talked about, that building plan has got us here today. And for our climate and for our families that need time with their kids and not stuck in traffic, that is a reasonable, rational approach, and it does require lots of investment. It is investing in infrastructure just like our other aspects of infrastructure. It's also very possible that we preserve our communities by taking care of our communities and that every community does their fair share. Just yesterday, Newsom announced his executive order about looking at state lands and how state lands can be repurposed for affordable housing and doing an inventory. And it might be, just like that caller mentioned, that there is a parcel that is already built out that can be converted to housing so that we preserve our open space that we all know and love in the communities. And in Wiener's bill, it has a provision about in jobs-rich communities that they need to do more of their fair share and opens up and challenges the exclusive communities that have taken place over decades. And back to affordability.
Maybe we should clarify first. How much does the governor emphasize affordable housing as opposed to an increase in all housing stock?
It's both. So he has called for 3.5 million new homes and that a portion of those absolutely need to be affordable. And that's why if we look at the budget where the programs are being invested to very low, extremely low, moderate income homes. So we're talking about the wide swath of people who are working families and people with special needs and seniors on fixed incomes that need homes. And so level of affordability, it's based on the program, but it's targeted to different communities to meet everybody's needs.
And let me bring up another caller board, and that's you, Brian. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I had two quick questions. One was, your guest said that there were places where this housing problem had been solved, and so I'd be interested to hear the specifics of where those are and how that was done. And secondly, why is no one talking about trying to move jobs where the housing is available instead of trying to move housing into areas that are already in many places overcrowded?
Yeah, both good questions, Brian. I thank you for them. And let me go to Chris Lee. First of all, housing solutions, what do you think of, Chris, when you hear that?
You know, I think there's a lot of factors that go into that. If there's a jurisdiction that we think has, you know, solved the housing crisis, I would like to hear about it because there's a lot of things that go in there.
What about beyond California, though?
Beyond California. You know, my expertise is in California, so I can't really speak to that. But, you know, I think California has some unique constraints with the way our tax system works, with our environmental laws,
absolutely,
with our economy.
But Brian raised another good question. What about moving jobs to where housing can be or where housing already is?
Well, talk about, you know, if a local official had the secret sauce to know how to bring jobs to their community, I think everyone would be doing that. So, again, factors beyond local government control, that would be a great item for someone to be able to influence.
Well, let me thank Brian for his call. Amy Fishman, you wanted to add in here?
Yeah, I do want to say that market forces are absolutely at play, but so are decades of policy. If we look at the way that our cities and our neighborhoods have developed over the years, it's based on old redlining maps. If we look at the suburbanization that took place after World War II, all of this is, you know, that's what created the sprawl. So we know that policy got us into this mess. Yes, the market as well, but policy, we have to start taking those steps to change the policy to get the outcomes that we need.
Of course, we had a legislative policy, like I said, for about 50 years, and it just wasn't really holding anybody accountable. The targets were there. The numbers were there. The legislation was there. I mean, that in itself is kind of a scandal.
That's why we need the teeth, because the policy was in place, but there wasn't really the teeth to enforce it.
Chris, you were going to say something, Chris Lee?
I would say the policy has been make sure your zoning can accommodate growth. And we had a major overhaul of the legislation that controls that process last year, and I expect that we'll see higher numbers in areas where vacancies are lower in this upcoming round of updates. So look for that. But I think the policy appropriately recognizes that our control is over the land use. And so once you are done with a plan and it's approved, you are demonstrating that you can accommodate growth through your zoning. Then it's up to the private sector. Then it's up to the availability of subsidy for below market rate housing to come through and actually construct the units.
Chris Lee, again, is legislative representative for housing, land use, and transportation with the California State Association of Counties. And here's Fred. Fred, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. You know, so much of the conversation is always dominated by the extremes, you know, the people who are, you know, lower economic class or people who are housing insecure. And on the opposite side, it's always been about the, you know, developers and the affluent areas. But so much needs to be discussed still about the people who are in the middle class, including, you know, people who are in the upper middle class, you know, people who are, you know, many who are first generation immigrants, you know, who came here on the promise that, you know, they can work hard, buy an income property, move ahead in life, you know, and there's nothing about, you know, how that's going to impact, you know, people in, you know, those areas. And so I'd like to hear your guest's comments about, you know, well, what about, you know, upper middle class folks? What about, you know, established immigrant communities here? How are they going to be impacted by this delicate balance of, you know, trying to equal things out for everybody?
Yeah, I think it's an important point, and I thank you for it, Fred. I had alluded earlier to the governor talking to Silicon Valley tech leaders about they're kicking in about $500 million to support affordable housing efforts, but some of this really was located or focused on middle class. Chris Lee, let's talk about middle class or housing for the middle class.
I think that's a good question. I think there are some resources. There's discussions about expanding tax credits and looking, I believe, at 60 to 80% area median income households and providing some assistance there. But it's definitely a tough issue. And the caller's right. We're talking about lots of different market segments here. And there's not many segments for which the shortage isn't pressing.
Say something about that, Amy Fishman, before we wrap up here.
Yeah. So we in the Bay Area just went through a major process to look comprehensively at the region, and I think the lessons learned have lessons for the state. And the comprehensive approach looks at the three P's: production, preservation, and protections. And we need all three to address the crisis for people at the low, middle, and high ends of the income spectrum and get housing done.
One final comment from a listener who says, I take exception to Jane's contention that her pristine, nice neighborhood evolved that way naturally. Federal government policies created the suburbs and the inner city. Thank to our guests, Amy Fishman, Executive Director, Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. Thank you for being with
us. Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks, Chris Lee, Legislative Representative for Housing, Land Use, and Transportation for the California State Association of Counties. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners, here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And our 10 o'clock hour, Dean Ornish will be joining us. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.